beautiful people, Bobby the Awesome here. As many of you know, two things about me. One, I just opened a non-alcoholic bottle shop, is what they call it, but it's basically like a liquor store with no liquor. Because, as you know, the second thing about me is I would love everyone to be emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally healthy. This is in perfect alignment with using natural, helpful ways to take care of ourselves in all those facets. Here's one example. I drink too much cream in my coffee. Well, one of the products in the store is a moment. It's like a hot chocolate with wonderful cinnamon and nutmeg in it. And it has gotten me off of my 3 to 4 cup coffee habit by drinking this 15 calorie beverage every day instead of coffee. Whether you're looking to alternate or cut back on regular drinking of alcohol, but have great flavor profiles, or want to drink something out of a sexy glass, or whether you're completely not drinking drinks that have things with antioxidants, brighten our mood, improve our digestive system, help us with brain fog. There's so many options, and they don't have to be drugs, traditional drugs. They can be just beautiful, good for us, things our bodies crave and need. So I am happy to announce that my online store, so you don't have to be here in Naugatuck, Connecticut. You can be anywhere in the country, in the US. You can shop as if you're in my store. You can customize what you want to order. You can order one of this, 10 of that. We're going to ship for free on orders over $50. There's many different alternatives in this space, and they taste so delicious. Everybody's taste is different, but there's a taste for every profile. Check out the selection. It's getting added to every single week. Check out 321nokidding.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thanks for checking us out. I love you, beautiful people. And now let's get started with today's show. Hello, everybody. Welcome to 321nokidding. I am Bobby the Awesome. And today I am joined with Anders Bergman, all the way from Malta. Welcome to 321, Anders.
Thank you very much, Bobby. I appreciate being on the show.
I'm so glad that you reached out. And you have something that needs to be shared with the whole world. So I can't wait to dive in with that. But why don't you start out by giving us a little introduction, kind of the basics, who you are, what's going on, that kind of stuff, whatever you care to share.
So I started in the gambling industry about 10 years ago now, after my university. And I started off as a casino affiliate. It was a fun business to be in. And you learn a lot about how the internet works, how the industry works, and how people work. And I did that for a few years. And after a while, I got bored with the whole thing, and I actually went into some kind of depression. And I thought, okay, I need to do something else. And a friend, he said, why don't you do anything to help people instead? And I thought that sounded like a very good idea. So I started thinking about what can I do? What can we do differently? And so on. And I saw a great need, because people, there are a lot of groups, Facebook groups, forums, and so on. And people talk about gambling. They might say that, hey, I haven't gambled for 5 years. I haven't gambled for 10 years. But they are still talking about gambling. So for me, they are not free from their addiction. And I wanted to do something differently, something that could help people become free so they don't need to think about gambling anymore. If you're really free from something, you don't need to think about it. So that's where I started. And it actually started with a TED talk with Yuval Harari. He talks about addiction in a completely different way. And something resonated with my way of thinking as well. And I looked at his videos. I went back to the sources of what he was talking about, and unraveled the rat park experiments, the experiments with mice in the 50s, and other studies that have been done in the same way ever since. And there was so much more to addiction than I thought. So that's where I started.
So I have a couple follow-up questions about some of the things you just said. So what exactly did you do for the casino? Because when you said you left that job and you went into depression, I almost wonder if you had that same action and adrenaline feel doing that role. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong on interpreting that. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what was your role in that casino world to start? Do you mind sharing that?
Absolutely. So I worked online. I have my own company. And we were doing comparison sites, casino affiliate sites. Basically, you set up a website, you list a lot of casinos, you write about these casinos, you write about slots, you write about different things. So you're more in a promotion part of the industry than actually running the casino yourself.
Okay.
And you don't really have any connection with any players. What you see is a visitor on your site. You have no idea who that person is. And you have no connection with the people that go through your sites. Yeah. But okay. Yeah, you are in the industry. So, and especially in the online industry, then in Europe, we work online and people gamble online. It's a huge difference to how it is in the US. It will come to the US too, but so far, 20, 30% of the players play online. Compared to Europe, they're probably 80, 90% play online, especially in Sweden, where I come from.
Wow. Okay, I understand. And affiliate marketing, now I understand completely what you're talking about. And I tried that a little, not to promote the casinos, but that actually, that online selling is almost kind of like gambling, right? I mean, there's the component where you're actually doing the work and writing the text and its strategy with marketing, but you can get the high as you're chasing the sales to see, you know, like what's going in your account. But I digress. then you reference, I want to make sure I get this fella's name. You said it's Johan. What was his last
Johan name? Johan Pari.
I'm going to have to research that.
Yeah. And he spells with 2 N. He's a Dutch guy.
Okay, perfect. And you said, you mentioned the rat study. And for my listeners who might not know what that's about, I don't want to assume, but are you talking about the one with cocaine?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to share a little about that and maybe why that struck you so much?
Absolutely. So, when I started with addiction and studying addiction, I thought that, hey, you take a substance, whether that is cocaine or whether that's dopamine or whatever it is, and you get hooked by it. And where is that coming from? It comes from studies they did on mice in the 50s. They put mice in different small boxes, and then they gave the mice a choice. The mouse a choice. Either spiked water with heroin or clean water. And within days, all mice were hooked on the spiked water. And within a few weeks, all of them had died. And the conclusion was simple. Heroin is so addictive that the mice lost all control. They lost all control to eat because they forgot to eat. Or they lost control or willing to live, basically. So they all died. And the conclusion was heroin is very addictive. And that's been living with us ever since. But in the late 60s and early 70s, the Vietnam War was in Vietnam, and hundreds of thousands of American soldiers went to the war. And during that time, they took heroin. And back in the States, the authorities were terrified that soon our streets would be filled up with heroin junkies. And the war ended, and these soldiers came back. But 95% of them quit and were clean after a year. And the researchers say, I have no idea, how could this be? So then there was this guy, Canadian guy, Bruce Alexander. He fought back to the experiments on mice, and he thought, maybe it's the cage that is the problem. So he redesigned the experiments and he created Rath Park, heaven for mice. You can imagine what you put in heaven for mice. Mountains of cheese, wheels, tunnels, a lot of other mice to play with and have sex with. And then he gave the mice the same choice. Clean water, spiked water. And now something peculiar happened. None of the mice choose the spiked water. None of the mice shown any signs of addiction. Sure, they sipped on the spiked water from time to time, but none of them showed any signs of addiction, and none of them died from overdose. So by changing the environment, the cage, Bruce Alexander went from 100% death rate to zero.
Wow.
And this had been, they have done this similar experiments in Switzerland on humans, where they have given addicts meaning in life. And they have seen dramatic changes in the suicide rates and death rates and the number of addicts at the same time. So it's by changing the environment, you can change a lot in the addiction. So I don't know where I made that, the connection between pain and addiction, but I believe pain is the cause of addiction. And gambling, alcohol, drugs, sex, shopping, it's a solution. It's the best way our brain knows to escape that pain.
Yeah.
So we define addiction or gambling addiction as if a person in pain feels an urge to gamble, he or she is a gambling addict. But you can fill in anything there. If a person in pain feels an urge to drink, he or she is an alcoholic. So for us, the definition of addiction is pretty simple. Yeah. And one guy, pretty famous, Albert Einstein, he once said, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand it well enough. So for us, the simpler we can make something, the easier it is to understand, the better it is.
Yeah.
We try to use a language on the platform that we work on that is easy to understand for anyone, because we have people from all over the world and we could use fancy language that you will see a clinician use or a researcher in a research paper. But no one understands those terms. So why would we use them? We want to use a simple language, make things as simple as possible. And we have had a lot of positive feedback on the way we use our language on the platform. So,
okay, well, you brought it up, the platform. So let's dive right into that. Thank you for sharing that story. You gave me a couple light bulb moments. My personal vision, like why I started the podcast and what I want to get to, is to build what I call recovery playgrounds. So they're going to be a place that sounds a lot like the Rat Park. And I had never equated it that way, because I want no alcohol, no drinking, no kids, but a lot of activity and connection. So thank you. You just kind of bridged a gap for me. So the platform, quitgamble.com, is your baby, right? You're the founder and you started it. And that's what you were referring to when you said a platform with easy language, correct?
That's correct. Yes.
All right. So why don't you tell us about that? Like I want you to brag on this, please, so that people know that it's there and it exists and it doesn't matter where you are in the world. Please take that opportunity.
So when I talk about addiction in general, if I talk to someone that haven't had a gambling addiction, for instance, it's very hard for them to understand how can you be addicted to gambling, or what does that mean, or even understand what addiction is. So I believe gambling is doing something for us. And to explain that, I usually use a metaphor with alcohol, because most of us have drinking alcohol and most of us can relate to that. So let's say you walk into a bar and you see a really gorgeous person, someone that you want to talk to, someone you feel attracted to. What do you do in that situation? Some people, I call them superhuman. They just walk up to anyone and say, hey, gorgeous, how are you doing? But most of us are not that way. We might walk to a corner somewhere and stay and look. And then doubtful thoughts and feelings are coming to our mind. Why would that person want to talk to me? What will we talk about? And for God's sake, what if the person rejects me? And these thoughts and feelings are very painful. It's things that we do anything to get rid of. But we are in a bar, so there is a magic solution. Alcohol. So you take a shot, and you might feel braver after the first shot. That might be just the effect of that motion. But you take another one and another one, and gradually something happens. These negative thoughts and feelings that you had are pushed aside. Alcohol actually releases dopamine, and dopamine boosts your self-confidence as well. So after a few shots, you might walk up to this person. That person might laugh at you because you are walking funny since you are almost drunk now. But the point of the story is not whether or not you succeed in talking to the person. The core of the story is that alcohol is doing something for us. And gambling works the same way.
I agree.
So what we try to do on the platform is to help people understand that gambling is doing something for you. And it might sound weird, but when people come to the platform, they have gambled for years. They have tried to stop for years. And one of the biggest problems they have is that they are desperate because they don't understand why they continue gambling. They don't know why they gamble. How can I do this to myself? So the first thing I want to help people understand is, what is gambling doing for you? What itch is gambling scratching? What problem is it trying to solve?
Do you mind if I share something, or kind of, you may already know this, but you just brought up such a good point. They don't know why they're continuing to do it. And your belief is that if they knew that, they have a better chance of recovering, right? Is that what I heard?
Absolutely. Okay.
So the old way, or the prior way, the only solution for a really long time was 12-step program. So Gamblers Anonymous, which I am a fan of, and it's helped me tremendously. However, it doesn't mean I agree with every little aspect of it. But in the literature, it specifically says, is knowing why we gamble important? And once upon a time, I believe the answer, it said no, insofar of knowing why, it doesn't matter. But the more I learn, and the more folks I talk to like you, or the research, the more I'm 100% in belief that knowing why does help us with our success rate. So I kind of just wanted to validate your point and let you know that that's almost like a culture thing in the recovery world. We're told at every meeting, and we read it every meeting, do you need to know? No, 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 you don't need to know. And it's like, it would be like a doctor trying to fix a broken bone that doesn't have the answers on, you know, like how it got broke or how to put it back together again. So I just had to say that.
Which bone is actually broken?
Yeah, exactly.
So I really like Gamblers Anonymous. Or for me, it's like, if you are a Gamblers Anonymous fan, I'm just super happy. If you have found something that works for you, I couldn't be more happier. So it's, yes, to say that. I didn't know that Gamblers Anonymous said that it's not important, which is, okay, here I'm going against that Gamblers Anonymous, because for me, that's completely false. If you don't know why you're gambling, I'd say that the chance of stopping is very slim. And the problem that most people are doing when they try to stop gambling is that they try to just stay away from gambling.
Yeah.
That's the solution for most people. And that's why most people fail. I don't know. I've tried to find statistics for addiction in general and success rates for different programs. So far, I haven't found any. Yeah, but I guess that 95% of people that try to stop gambling without doing anything will fail. Unfortunately, that's the way it is. It might be that they over time succeed in some way, but they will never be free if they don't understand why they gamble in the first place. So understanding that, it might be loneliness, it might be boredom. We have asked 1,500 people this question. We created a test we call the happiness test. It's not going to tell you if you have a gambling problem, but it's trying to explain why it's so hard to stop gambling. What is gambling doing for you? So the most common answer is loneliness, stress, boredom. Then you can probably add anxiety to that. And you have covered most people's reason why they gamble. But when they come to us, a lot of people say, hey, I'm gambling to win big. That's why they buy. I'm gambling so I can win big money because that would change my life. And then we ask them, okay, I understand that. I mean, I would like to win a lot of money too. I mean, wow, think of winning $1 million. Who wouldn't want to do that? But what happens when you win? Do you stop gambling or do you continue gambling? And so far, I haven't met one person that says they stop. No, they don't stop. They continue gamble until they have no money left.
Mm-hmm.
And then a very interesting thing happens when we come to that conclusion. That perhaps gambling is not about winning at all. Perhaps gambling, for a gambling addict, gambling has nothing to do with money. It has to do with something else, because it doesn't matter if you win or lose. You continue gamble anyway. The reason that I believe it feels great to win, that you get this, wow, and now I won, it's because now your brain knows, hey, I can continue gamble for a bit longer. That's the reward you get.
Yeah.
So people that win, actually, they will just continue gambling longer. There might be some exceptions. I just haven't met them yet. And when people come to the platform, we give them the happiness test. We ask them these questions. We're trying to figure out why they gamble. But if I ask you the question directly, why do you gamble? There is a lot of value in that question, or there is a lot of judgment. If you ask someone why do you do that to yourself? It's a lot of judgment in that question. So I don't ask, why do you gamble? I ask, what happens when you gamble?
Mm-hmm.
What happens inside you when you gamble? How does it feel? What do you think about? And perhaps most importantly, what do you not feel and what do you not think about? If you spend time on those questions, you do the happiness test and you spend time on those questions, I think that you have done 30% of the job to become free of gambling. Because that's how important it is to understand what you're fighting.
Right.
And if you don't know what you're fighting, it's impossible to win. We created a course called the Goal Setting Course. And in the introduction to that, I say, I can teach you how to beat Tiger Woods in golf in 5 minutes. You only need to practice golf for 5 minutes, and I promise you that you will beat Tiger Woods. Sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
I can do it in 10 seconds. The only thing I need to do is to put a blindfold on Tiger. Because if you don't know what you're fighting or where you're going, you have absolutely no chance of reaching it. So Tiger can be the best player of all time, but if he doesn't see the hole, it's very, very hard to know where to play.
Yeah.
So we believe that pain is the cause of addiction. And the question is, what is that pain for you? And when I say pain, I talk about mental pain, but it could also be physical pain. And we use that term as a collection word for stress, loneliness, boredom, anxiety. Maybe you had a fight with your spouse. Maybe you had a tough time at work today. I had one person on the platform. He said to me, "Anders, today I made a mistake. It will cost my company $5,000. And my first thought was to go home and gamble. He had made an important connection there between feeling bad and the urge to gamble. So if you want to stop gambling, if you understand what gambling is doing for you, you can work with the underlying causes of the addiction. If you gamble because you're lonely, if we can find a way for you to not feel lonely or to learn how to enjoy yourself and love spending time on your own, you will not feel that urge to gamble anymore. I don't say that there is one reason that everyone is gambling, but there is probably the 80-20 rule that 20% of things are covering 80% of the reasons you gamble. And you can find one after another of these things. And when you do that, when you work with the underlying causes of your addiction, you can actually become free. And my goal is to help people become happier as a person, because I believe a happy person has less reason to escape. So the addiction will not have the same effect. If I gamble, I don't feel a thing. I don't get the escape. I probably, if I play poker, that I do sometimes, I need to play a lot of tables because otherwise I get bored with it. But I don't get any excitement, anything that I feel. I can feel that I have too much money on the table and I feel worried about that. But that's not a nice feeling. So I have no nice feeling connected to gambling. And it's the same with alcohol. When I drink alcohol, I can drink because I can enjoy a glass of wine. But I never drink to escape from anything. So from my perspective, I can never get addicted to it, because it's the escape from something we get addicted to. Gambling, sex, alcohol, drugs, it's just the means we use to do that escape.
How did you, one of the things I love about this and about you is that you're not coming at it from a addiction, like being an addiction lens, where you have all this noise about what people told you. Like, it's you're coming at it very subjectively and or objectively. So I really love that. And I'm wondering, you have not said one thing that I disagree with after immersing myself in the recovery world. So I want to know, like, how did you get all this information? Like, how did this start? Like, counselors and therapists go to school and they get all the textbook answers. And obviously, I don't think that that's working stupendously either, because so many people do go back. Not that these guys aren't working their tails off. But how did you get all this knowledge, Anders? Like, you're saying things in such a way. I just love it. In my head, I'm going, yes, 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 yes. Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. So tell me a little about that. Like, how, you, It sounds like you've collected data from the subjects, like from the folks struggling, but how did you even know what questions to ask, and what did that journey look like?
So I come from a background of engineering and economics. I studied hard at the university and spent 5 years at the university. But on the side, I studied psychology. I studied personal development, because that's where actually my heart was. I have read so many things about self-development and so on, how to set goals, how to communicate, how to do this and that. And yeah, that's, even if I have all these points on the university, that's what I enjoyed the most. I think engineering is very good because you learn logic. So how can you put pieces together? How can you create a sequence of things? So you have the psychology or the part. I haven't read a lot of psychology books, no. I have listened to audio programs on different things. Then I have used my own logic to come up with things. I have the Rat Park experiments. They were like, oh, this is so interesting. So as I said, I don't remember when I made the connection between pain and addiction. But for me, the mice took heroin because they were bored and lonely in these cages. That was some kind of pain. So when I started this project, the first thing I needed was a test. I needed something to measure pain. How do you measure pain? I mean, the doctor, they have a way when you're laying in the hospital and they ask you, on a scale 1 to 10, how much pain are you in now? That's physical pain, and it's extremely subjective. Yeah, so it's not a test we can use. When we were kids, we had another way to measure pain. I don't know if you know the game. You probably have a different name for it, but it's called, in Swedish, 1,000 needles. You basically grab someone's arm like this and you twist. It's painful. But you do that on other kids and you're like, oh, does it hurt? And you say it with some anticipation, like, does it hurt? And if the person is stupid enough to say no, because you're so tough, right? You ask them, how about now?
Oh.
So you do it harder, basically. And that is one way to measure pain. But again, it's physical pain. So how do you measure pain when it comes to mental pain? How do you measure that? And I couldn't find a test for that. I didn't read the things and so on. But I thought, okay, you have pain. And what is pain? When it comes to mental pain, it's something to do with our needs. So you have social needs. If you go and you have dinner with friends, and you're chatting and perhaps drinking a glass of water or something, you have a good time, then you feel happy, you feel good, right? In that situation, your social needs are met. So you feel good, you feel happy. But then another day you come home from work and suddenly the house is empty. And it goes quite quickly that you feel lonely. And loneliness is one type of pain. It's very painful to be lonely. And it's something that we do almost anything to get rid of. So I made the connection between getting your needs met and happiness, and not getting your needs met and loneliness and pain. And there is a model, probably the most popular model in social science to talk about behavior. It's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Anyone that is studying at university will have studied that. Probably not so much, but still, most people know about it. And the Maslow's hierarchy of needs have 5 levels. You have basic needs, the needs that if you don't get these met, you die, because you need to breathe, you need water. Actually, on the first level is also sex from a reproduction level.
That makes sense.
Food is also on that level. But we talk about food, basically food to survive, not food for pleasure. That's the first level. If you don't get these things met, you will die. But then you have the second level, which is shelter, some place to stay. Peace is on the second level. And even a job is on the second level. And on the third level, you have social needs that you have. And the fourth level is self-confidence levels. Basically, it's power, money, and stuff like that. And when you reach the highest level, the fifth level, it's about self-actualization. So when people are doing charity work, that could be philanthropy or simply helping other people with things. Then you're operating on a higher level, the fifth level. And each level is dependent on the other levels. So a person that is fleeing the war in Ukraine, they are leaving their family, they are leaving their friends, and they are doing something because the level two is more important than level three. If you're not filling up your needs on level two, it doesn't matter about how much money you have. It doesn't matter anything else. Level one, most important. Level two is more important than the third level. So the happiness test is based on Maslow's hierarchy of needs and our need for different things. And we ask people questions about different levels in this pyramid. And based on that, we can assess how much pain the person is in. Not physical pain, but mental pain. And the lower score you have on the test, the higher the probability is that gambling will have an escape function for you, or drinking, or whatever it is you're doing. You can take the happiness test even if you're not gambling at all. Yeah. But the goal for me is to get you to higher levels in the happiness test, to higher levels in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Because if you reach the fifth and final level, you have nothing to escape from anymore. And if my hypothesis is correct regarding gambling or addiction, that we use something to escape, and it's the escape that you get addicted to, not the actual thing you take, then if you're a happy person, you will not get the escape anymore. So you are actually becoming a free person.
Does your program, is it catered just to gamblers, or do you give the happiness test to other addictions?
At the moment, the people that find us is in most cases gamblers. We have not marketed ourselves in any case to anyone, but I mean, the website right now is targeting or trying to help gambling addicts. But if someone would have an alcohol problem and they for some reason find my website, they can do the happiness test and they can just switch the word alcohol or gambling, because for me, addiction is the same. It's no difference between the addictions, because both are ways to escape.
That makes sense.
Yeah. And when it comes, our platform is based on escapism, escape theory. And I had no idea what escape theory was when I created the platform. So yes, you can read about that in psychology, but I came from another perspective, from my own logic. And it was just someone telling me after a year or so, "Oh, you're using escapism." And I said, "Huh, is that what it's called? Okay." Yeah. And it's the same with self-harm, limiting self-harm.
Limiting beliefs?
No, it's if you, I sat last summer and I was thinking about gambling, and my goal is to help you stop gambling. But that is not the goal today. That is the goal for maybe a year in the future. But in a year's time, you will be free from gambling. But that's not the goal today. I mean, we can't have that goal today because it's, of course, some people might be able to stop the first day, and getting away from gambling is important. But the goal is that you are stopping over time, because that's the only way you can actually become free from it. If you work with the underlying causes of the addiction gradually push away these urges, or remove these urges from your life. And it's called harm reduction, that theory. And it's, again, it was something that I thought about from my own perspective, and I had no idea that that existed. But it's, I believe it's more important that you work on yourself than you actually stop gambling today. So if you use the method of just stop cold turkey, you only have your willpower to deal with. That's the only thing you have. And in some cases, I had a girlfriend once. I said to her, I will not date a smoker. She stopped cold turkey. Bam. She didn't smoke for 5 years when we were together.
You must be superhuman.
Yeah, or she had a very strong motivation to do it. So you can do it if you have that super motivation, because then, yeah, that's one of these 5% or 10% or whatever it is that succeed cold turkey. But for me, it's more important that you work with the underlying causes of the addiction, that you stop gambling right away. Because if I say, hey, Bobby, you mustn't gamble if you are on my platform. You're not allowed to be on the platform if you gamble, continue gambling. Then what I do indirectly is I create a lot of pain in you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have used gambling as a way to escape for a very long time.
Right.
Of course, it could be a gambling addict that is 2 weeks into their addiction. I believe you can be addicted in 24 hours. So it mustn't be it can also be a person that hasn't been addicted for a long time. But in most cases, the person has used gambling for a long time. So if I tell them that, hey, you can't gamble, it will require all their willpower to not gamble. And that would create enormous stress in their life. And that by itself creates a lot of pain. And what is pain? A trigger for gambling. So right. You will only get stronger and stronger urges to gamble. And sooner or later, that willpower is gone. And the person has a relapse.
I have never heard harm reduction presented this way before, and never really understood the value in the way that you're presenting it. So you're right. You're using language and clarifying things in a way that are very easy to digest. I just had to acknowledge that, because we've talked about harm reduction at one of the places I went to. And my first perception was, well, geez, like, so I could just keep gambling, but I got to gamble less. All right. Like, not really understanding that there was a value to it. And in the counselor and in the professional community about it, there's a lot of mixed feelings about it. But the way you just described it was beautiful, and it makes me totally in favor of it.
Thank you very much. I mean, if a person continues to gamble, you need to work on different ways to minimize the actual harm that it causes the person. Another thing that we can do when we do it online is that the cost of helping one person is very small compared to if you go into treatment. I mean, if you go to a treatment center, either you pay for it yourself, or an insurance pay for it, or someone pays for it. but I have seen cost of $15,000 per month. Mm-hmm. And if you do that in Sweden, that is probably a standard fee, even if no one would pay it from their own pocket, but someone is paying that because that's what it costs to do things in many countries. Yeah. But also, if you go to a psychologist, it costs a few hundred euros an hour, a few hundred dollars an hour. And no one has the money to pay for you to not admit you have a problem, to not come to that stage when you come to treatment. If you're not ready for that yet, you cannot be there because it's too expensive.
Right.
But when you work online, we are two people helping 2,400 people right now.
Wow.
Yeah, and adding one person more into that doesn't cost me that much. So again, we can work with these kind of models because we are helping, we are working on a different, in a different way with our way of helping people. And so for me, you don't need to admit you have a gambling problem to be allowed in on the platform. I usually say it's great if you do, because that means that you have come somewhere on the in your own development. Yeah. But if you don't want to admit that, or you're not ready to admit that, you don't need to. And no one is asking you, hey, do you have a gambling problem? Probably they know if they have a gambling problem because they are here. So the happiness test, for instance, will not tell you if you have a gambling problem because I don't want to label it on you anyway. Yeah. You know if you have a problem or not. You don't need me to tell you that. So the happiness test will tell you if you are in the risk zone of developing an addiction or what that would mean to you.
Mm. So it's a lot of digital coursework that they're getting to do on their terms. Is that the way it works? Like you take the happiness test and then you start taking courses like the goal setting one?
Exactly. So we have, today we have 15 different courses, each targeting different kinds of pain or different kinds of aspects of your life. So setting goals might not directly work with pain, but it gives you directions. We have also a course that I recommend anyone that comes to the platform. It's creating a change plan. Mm. And that course is about helping you become proactive. Because if you stop cold turkey, again, you are only reacting to your urges.
Yep.
You have your willpower, yes. And in some cases, that's enormous. But we see a lot of people coming to the platform for a few days and they get like boosted. Oh, no, now I can do anything. And then they leave and we don't see them again for a few months. And then they come back and they say, hey, Anders, I had a relapse. And that sucks. But that's the truth because they didn't work on themselves. And I can understand that because it requires work.
Yeah, it does.
But the good news is that what you do on our platform is not just helping you stop gambling. It helps you become a happier person. And being a happy person is probably the goal that most people have, even if they've never set it.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're getting close on time. I have one more question. And then if there's anything else that you want to make sure that you get out there, and especially where to find you in the site, is it all independent work or is there a community piece to it as well? Or is it a choice? Like, what does that part of it look like? Is it all independent studies or can they communicate with other folks on the platform?
So the community is 2,400 people right now. Basically, we have a version that looks like Facebook. So you can do anything that you can do on Facebook, you can do on our platform too.
Okay.
And so we have support groups, we have the community, we have a news feed where you can chat exactly like you use Facebook for. You can become friends with people, you can chat with people. You can use the desktop version of the platform, or you can download the mobile app. So we have a mobile app where you can do everything as well. Yeah, the name of the app is Quit Gamble, and it's available on Android and on iPhone.
Beautiful. Congratulations. Like, it's not an easy feat to do the things that you have done. As a creator and an advocate myself, like, I know the amount of work it takes to get an app, to get a community, to make a course, to do the marketing. So I just have to say thank you for that. Like, it's a lot of work. And especially if there's only one or two of you putting that all together, just thank you for what you're doing for the community.
Thank you. We are doing our best. So it's, and we hope to be able to add some kind of support meetings and so on in the future. But if we do, I want to do it in a different way than when it's done. I don't want to have meetings that doesn't have a goal for them. Mm. Just talking, yeah, that they can do anywhere, but I want to do something else. And I don't know how to do that yet, so I haven't added that feature. In some cases, I have personal coaching with people as well. And it's something I learn a lot from too. So it's not just for that person. I actually get out a lot of from it myself. So,
oh, I'm sure. So any closing thoughts before we say goodbye? And I definitely want to hold you hostage as soon as we hang up, because I have a couple questions for you off air.
No, I'm happy to have talked about the topic. As you can hear, I'm very passionate about the topic addiction. And it's true, we have a quite different approach to things. And we don't see GA or psychologists or anyone as a competitor. We are just seeing them as an alternative, or we are an alternative to them. We are trying to create something that is scalable and available in any country in the world. And we have around 95 countries right now where we have users from. And hopefully that number goes up in the future.
Is all the coursework in English?
The whole platform is available in English. And the website is available in Swedish and English. And in a few weeks, we will actually add Spanish for the website, not for the courses and the platform, because that would be, oh my goodness, that is a big project. We have worked with the platform for 4.5 years now. So it's translating it to Spanish would be a ginormous project, but it will come in the future, I hope.
Yes. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here, Anders, and thank you for everything that you're doing. I hope we get to stay connected in the future. And I agree with you. It's not competition. Anybody that's working on this and helping people and just trying to get through the addiction and give people the resources, it should be collaboration, in my opinion, too. So I love it.
Thank you very much for having me.
Hi again, beautiful people. Still me. One other thing I wanted to let you know is I screwed up and I have moved in the background different podcast providers. And in the process, I lost all my ratings, all my reviews, all my stars and all those things. So I am building from the ground up. So if you found that you enjoyed the show and you want to help support me in a free way that takes about 30 seconds, I would love it. Give me a follow, a rating, a review. Be honest, because I want to make this the best experience for you. But if you can help me in that way, I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks again, beautiful people. Love ya.